You're listening to an encore presentation of The Rush with Ryan and Jay. News Talk 1010.
They could have killed somebody.
I don't think there were a ton of other paths to take on that.
Well, it's creative.
Time to feel the rush of the round table.
All right, welcome to it for Wednesday, the 20th of November. We welcome these fine folk. Host of the Poll Position, John Paul, is with us. Hey, John.
G'day, g'day.
Political commentator and international man of mystery, Renaissance man as well, Trevor Mayo in studio.
That's a new one. Thank you.
I've added to it. Thank you.
Sweet.
And creative director of the Why Not Theater, Oase Lightwalla. How are you?
Thanks for having me.
No problem.
All right. Let's start off with the Toronto Maple Leafs very quickly. We'll just get a take on the breaking news this afternoon. Mike Babcock is out as head coach. Sheldon Keefe, who was coaching the Marlies, will be taking over after the team has found itself in a losing skid of six games. They are currently 10th in the Eastern Conference. There are a lot of questions as to whether or not, you know, this is sort of the old guard going out and the new guard sort of catching up with the general manager, who's quite young himself, and Kyle Dubas. John Paul, we'll start with you. I know you're a guy who spends a lot of time at the arena and at the rinks. Is this something that was needed for this Leafs team to maybe turn the season around?
You know, I don't really know. Mike Babcock is as good a coach as you can find in the NHL. And I will say that Sheldon Keefe, who I've met several times because of his success with the Pembroke Lumber Kings, is just a fine guy. Like, he's a great coach as well, and his track record is certainly stellar as well. I kind of feel that with this team, unfortunately, with the deals that were cut with guys like Nylander and Matthews and even Marner to a degree, I feel that they maybe got a message that they are in charge, and I think Babcock's old school ways are he feels he's in charge, and I think that probably creates issues, and even with Kyle Dubas as well. So, look, it bugs me because I like the idea of Babcock, and I think he's accomplished a lot, and I don't know that six games really should be how we define success. However, that's the world we live in, and there's no question that Toronto fans and the Toronto media are harder on that team than any other team in the NHL, and at the same time, our expectations are very high. So it is what it is.
I also had a lot of success with the Lumber Kings, just so you know.
I always thought you were far better with the Cornwall Colts.
Yeah, I mean, there was that, but we don't talk about that as to why I got kicked off the team. I, you know, you also look at the way the whole Jason Spezza thing was happening. I don't want to get too far into the sports weeds, but, you know, you've got a general manager who wants one player on the ice. You've got a head coach who refuses to play him, Oase. You look at this, and you think, what? Does this matter?
So when I started coming on air with you guys a few months ago, I didn't realize how much I'd have to talk about hockey.
Neither did we.
It really feels like every time you're in.
Every time I name, I feel like it's a hockey story, and I feel like I should have made more clear in the, there was no interview process, you just asked me, and no one ever said that it was going to be 98% hockey, 2% everything else. I feel really unqualified to have any opinion. I hope the Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup, and whoever Babcock is, I hope he has a really great life.
Trevor,
that was awesome.
I mean, I agree. Like, I don't have a lot to say on this one, other than the fact I'm going to miss the Bab Sox. I loved that.
Okay.
But I mean, you know that the challenge is, I feel like in Toronto with any team, it always just the knee jerk and the armchair people are like, dump the coach. And, like, I don't follow it close enough, but that's where everyone, like, flips their table about the coach needs to go, and then all of a sudden we're ready to fire up the parade route again the next day. And I feel like we need to have a bit more of a deeper
challenge.
Right,
I'm just going to put it out there. Toronto Raptors dumped their successful, semi-successful coach. Next thing you know, the parade route was planned.
We just talked about this a few minutes ago. Lots of reaction at 7-10-10. Interested to hear what you guys think about this. The BC government is looking to crack down on hate and racism online. One of BC's MLAs pushing the provincial government to take a serious look at imposing fines that will be consequential for racist behavior. It'd be interesting to see if that actually happened. What we're trying to figure out, John, is if it would make that a difference, or would that just be, is the shaming enough for people?
You know, interestingly enough, I always default to you can't fix stupid. And I am all for a stupid tax, because I don't know that you can necessarily teach someone to not be racist. But I think if you take some of their money and you publicly shame them, eventually they maybe get it. So I don't have a problem with this. I'm sure there's a lot of lawyers that would have a long list of reasons why you maybe can't do it, and where the line begins and where it ends. But I think when it comes to racism, as Canadians, we want to crack down on it. We want to be the land of the free, and we want to have people welcome of all sizes, colors, backgrounds, religions, and everything. And I think it sends a good message if we get that serious.
Now, OA, specifically when we talk about hate in hockey. Just kidding.
Damn it.
This actually takes on a number of different levels when we talk about, you know, the public shaming that people get. I often wonder, as John says, that, you know, you can't tax stupid. When people are shamed online for what they've said, I don't know that that's enough. I don't know that even cuts through for a certain amount of people.
I think a tax on stupid is pretty helpful, actually. I think a fine on seatbelts has helped people take that up. I think the increased tax on cigarettes is a big part of why less people smoke. Now, I don't think the philosophy of this is actually that faulty. Like, I think it's a good idea if they can actually get around the legal challenges, because I'm sure there's like all kinds of problems that I'm not aware of. And also, it is problematic that the ice is white. I should just say,
it's good.
Yeah,
you're getting yourself right into the.
Yeah, so all the ice, all of it is totally 100% white. It's just really problematic. It doesn't.
Well, there's
doesn't
a red
really,
line and a blue line.
Trevor.
I support the notion of this, because I think the shaming online, cool. It doesn't seem to effectively work. I mean, you cancel one person online who's gone on a huge racist rant, and then four more people pop up as well. So, like,
it's a little bit of redneck whack-a-mole.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly, right? And so, like, I appreciate the notion. Like, yeah, like, let's tax them. Maybe that might change their behavior if they feel no shame in their hatred. But I think there also is a legal challenge here in terms of the free speech angle. And if you're starting to tax and put tickets on, I mean, the person who's yelling outrageous things in Dundas Square, as an example, right? Like, that is free speech. And so even if a lot of it is offensive and ridiculous. So I think that's the line. I'm not a lawyer. That needs to be figured out. But I appreciate the notion.
Yeah, listen, I don't love the thought police idea. For me, you know, I'm a free speech advocate. I believe that's pure free speech. But I realize I'm in the minority about mm-hmm. that. So I mean,
but maybe we could go further and call it an a-hole tax and, like, you know, give people fines for just being parking in two spaces and, like, the kind of behavior that we know, everybody knows is like not cool. And it's like
12 items in the 10 checkout line.
Just the quota alone.
Let's talk about who Canada's middle class actually is. Today, one of the more interesting, I think maybe the only interesting thing to come out of the appointment of cabinet has to do with a minister responsible for middle class prosperity. John, this caught me by surprise and was interesting. And we played an interview I did with the finance minister back in 2016, where he'd kind of danced around the definition, the specific definition of what middle class was. But when you hear that, is this minister going to do any good in your mind? And I don't even know what the first task would be.
It sounds like the title you give someone at work that wants a raise, but you can't give them a raise, so you give them a title.
Yep.
That's what it sounds like to me. Here's the thing. The problem with defining the middle class is, if you look at Stats Canada, it's like a football field from 45 grand to 120 grand, which is like those two people have nothing in common. The other side of it is if you live in the GTA, how much you make is very different than if you live somewhere like, say, Brockville or North Bay. So I don't know how you can actually define a middle class in Canada, because it's so different. And then you have to add in something that I don't think the government ever adds in, which is how people choose to spend their money. Because there are some people that make 50 grand a year and have a great life because they know how to manage money. And there are some people that make 400 grand a year and are dirt poor because they maybe need that tax that we were just talking about. So I don't know how you do it. I guess if you have this fancy title, your first job is to actually make it clear what the middle class is, because I don't think if you had 10 Canadians lined up on the street, I think you'd get 10 different answers.
Yeah, always. That feels to me like this government might go down the road of a 3.5-year study followed by checks for everyone come election time. That's just got that kind of ring to it.
It does feel like a very broad thing. I do think a definition is necessary. It feels a little bit like, to use a hockey analogy, like you have an assistant coach who's in charge of average players, but no one has defined what average is. And if I do think, though, there's some benefit if we can identify what that group is and what the needs of them, what that needs of that group are. And also, because what's always missing when we kind of lump everybody into middle class is, like, there are people below the middle class and their challenges are basically never really taken seriously because they don't really vote as much and they don't matter as much as a political bloc. But I feel like a real concrete definition would be helpful.
Yeah, and Trevor, my sense is that politicians are reluctant to put a specific definition on it, because they use it as a political tool. You followed all, you know, politics mm-hmm. your entire life. When you hear that, Am I right? Am I accurate in saying that the term middle class is thrown around way too much without any definition?
Absolutely. And means something different to different people. Like, we hear it all in the States from both parties. We hear it in all parties up here, and they all are referencing different things. I think one thing that we need to wait for is the mandate letter to actually understand what Justin Trudeau actually wants from this ministry. They'll have, like, what, the top 12 things that are expected to be accomplished through the ministry. So hopefully there may be a little bit more of definition in that mandate letter. The other thing is, though, the reason why the middle class is important, we don't know exactly what it is, but it's vital for a consumption-based economy, right? Like, it's, so yes, $40,000 or $120,000 is about having extra income that you can actually spend on goods and services, whether that be school, whether that be more food, whether that be other things. So it is very broad by definition as well. And so it's super important. And so I don't think the government did an effective job in communicating what they were doing for the middle class, or if they actually had enough policy or legislation on the table to actually promote and encourage middle class growth. And hopefully we'll see that with this new ministry.
Interesting story today about being doored, an all too real thing for Toronto cyclists when you're biking along, minding your own business, and a car door opens directly in front of you and injury ensues. Unfortunately, a very common occurrence in Toronto. Well, one NDP transit critic, Jessica Bell, will be introducing a new private members bill at a press conference tomorrow that will require the province to track dooring incidents, something that isn't currently done in Ontario. And I think almost unanimously, everyone has had an experience with this, John. I've actually, I'm sad to say, I'm the guy that talks on the show all the time about the Dutch reach, where you reach over with your right hand instead of your left, and you actually get to see behind you. I do that twice, then I forget about it. This happens to me all the time, and it's scary because the last thing I want to do is hurt somebody, but I do agree that we should probably start tracking these things.
Yeah, I was actually surprised it's something that you can't sort out in an Excel spreadsheet where somebody has checked it on a box somewhere and you can sort it and figure out. That surprised me because that seems like a very easy thing to do.
Maybe we need a new ministry.
The Minister of Dutch Reach.
Yeah, I'm the Dutch Reach
really
Ministry.
Sounds dirty if you
think
about
it. Sounds like I'm getting a free trip to Holland.
Yeah, the old Dutch Reach move. Anyhow, I think this comes down to we have to, again, educate the public, which is hard to do, but we need to teach them to look and also to pay attention, and that goes for all parties involved in any place on a road or on a sidewalk. Is you just can't get trapped in your little world. If you're in a big metal car or you're on something with wheels, you got to be looking, you got to be paying attention, because it's not just drivers, it's also the people in the back seat who feel like, I'm in the back seat, so I don't have any responsibilities right now, and they can be just as dangerous. So again, it's just about paying attention.
Yeah, always. I mean, this comes down to a new fine for passengers. The drivers are already liable for whoever's in their car, but it's a novel approach to an old problem.
And I mean, when you look at like the incidence rates of like now Ubers and Lyfts and like all kinds of vehicles that are stopping in all kinds of really dangerous places, as someone who drives a lot, I am terrified. My worst fear is like as dooring someone, and hurting them, because I know people who have died that way, and it's such a common thing, and I don't think the education is there. I think actually the solution is not this, though. I think the solution is more bike lanes is better. Actual infrastructure for the two modes of transportation to coexist.
I agree. I've been doored. It's scary. Even when you're looking at cars and you're trying to go wide on them, I think the challenge is you need people to be more aware. And until you actually put a penalty associated with that, I don't think there's a great enough incentive for people to actually change their behavior.
Trevor, John Paul, Oase, thank you for the hockey knowledge today. You're dropping bombs.
Very much.
Great roundtable as always. Thank you all.